Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Liberty Weekly podcast. This one is episode 156. The show notes may be found at libertyweekly.net/156. And towards the end of the episode, we discussed John Odermatt's coffee company, Run Your Mouth Coffee. Just wanted to say that if you go to rymcoffee.com and use the promo code LibertyWeekly, all one word, lowercase, you can get 10% off your first order. All right, without further ado, here is John Odermatt. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Liberty Weekly podcast. I'm your host, Patrick McFarlane, and joining me today is John Odermatt. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Patrick. I've been looking forward to coming on.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. I'm really excited to talk about your work. So for those members of our audience who aren't familiar with your show, do you want to just introduce yourself?
Sure, absolutely. So I host a podcast called Finding Freedom on the Lions of Liberty Network. And over on Lions of Liberty, we have three shows per week. It's a bit of a variety network. And my show used to be called Felony Friday. For the majority of the time I've had the show, which has been going on 5 years now, which is hard to believe. But, it's when it was Felony Friday, obviously, primarily criminal justice focused. I still focus on the criminal justice system, talking about, wrongful convictions and all kinds of injustice, especially pertaining to mostly nonviolent drug crimes. In fact, I'm planning within the next couple of weeks here to have on, we'll see, this will be crazy, but at the same time, I'm planning to talk to four or five of the individuals who got clemency from Donald Trump recently and were in life, serving life sentences for selling marijuana. So that'll be a pretty awesome episode. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's incredible. I that was one of the line items I wanted to talk to you about. But before we get to that, I just wanted to ask you, what got you interested in criminal justice reform?
Yeah, so as you and I were talking during the pre-show chat, I told you that my father's a lawyer. So from as early as I can remember, my dad's, he's always been someone who talks about his work, talks about his cases. And I always found that interesting. So I grew up in that environment. And I think that definitely opened my eyes a little bit to injustice, not necessarily, with what I mostly talk about now being the war on drugs and things like that. But with regard to wrongful convictions, he was a defense lawyer and he had some cases, some pretty prominent cases in the Pennsylvania area. That's where I grew up, in Pittsburgh. And I saw from an early age that, sometimes the way that the news reports things is not accurate to what happened. And, things deserve their day in court. So I had that bit of a primer, and I really didn't probably realize that primer, I definitely didn't realize it was going to lead me down this path, but I don't think I've talked about that part of it. My dad being a lawyer, this is the first time doing that with you, but I really do think now, reflecting on it, that's played a big role. But the story I've told a few times in the past is after I graduated college, I worked in management in a supervisory role for a steel framing manufacturing company. And I got shipped down to Georgia, then out to California. And when I was living in California, they were looking to expand, add another shift. And they put me in human resources and said, John, here's a stack of resumes. Look through these resumes and do whatever you do with resumes. Take out the bad ones, give us the good ones. I don't know why they trusted me to do that. I'm just some idiot with a college degree who had very little real world experience, but that's what happens in corporate America. You never know who's going to be looking at your resume. And I thought I was doing the right thing. As I'm going through the stack of resumes, I took all of the people who had some sort of criminal background, criminal conviction, misdemeanors, felonies. I took them out of the pool of potential people to be hired, to come in and get an interview. And I took the remaining stack up to my plant manager and, showed it to him, and he's leafing through the stack of resumes, and he's like, there's none in here with any criminal background. We normally have a lot with criminal backgrounds. I'm like, oh yeah, I took those ones out. And he said, those are a lot of our best workers, are people who are convicted felons and you know, have reformed themselves and turned their lives around. I'm like, oh, wow, I did not know that. That's amazing. So that opened my eyes immediately. And then upon, you know, getting to work with them, and I got to get out of the office and work out on the production floor with them and get to know people and, you know, get to talk about their families and things they're passionate about. And I just came to understand that, you know, I really had this sort of bubble view that I grew up in around specifically drugs and the war on drugs. I really thought wrongly that, you know, people, and not, even it's not necessarily that I was like 100% anti-drug, you know, I went to college, I experimented, all that stuff. But I looked at that differently than, you know, what was happening on the street with people selling drugs, or, you know, even people getting convicted of, you know, possession, stuff like that, which obviously that was a wrong viewpoint to have, but that opened my eyes big time. And then when I moved back to Pennsylvania, I was, you know, living back in Pittsburgh, and I met my, you know, soon to be wife, and we were dating at the time, and someone in her circle, one of her family members, got caught up in a, basically was extorted by an undercover agent that did several buys off of him. And, you know, I believe him, you know, talking with after the fact, as it happened, that he wasn't, you know, running some sort of, you know, marijuana selling enterprise. He thought he was doing a favor for a friend. And what proves that is that when they went to, they did the raid, they raided his, you know, apartment, they raided like 3 other places that they thought they had this big ring on a college campus. And he was the only one that they found absolutely nothing. They found stuff with every single other person there, but he'd done 3 buys in escalating amounts, or three deals in escalating amounts. That was just enough to charge him with a felony. And I think some of his so-called friends testified against him, and he ended up doing over, I guess, all told, about 1.5 years in prison and in a halfway house. And he was on probation for years and years. Of course, in Pennsylvania, you lose your Second Amendment rights. You are allowed to vote, though. Yippee, you could vote. But that's the way it is. So to this day, he still can't own a firearm unless that's changed retroactively. So after that happened, I was like, you know what? This is completely insane. I've been misinformed. You know, at the time, I was, you know, writing with Lions of Liberty, blogging, doing that type of stuff. I thought I'll start talking about criminal justice stuff. Start talking about these stories and highlight them, you know, in just a way that really shows the absurdity of these sentences. And I started this thing called Felony Friday. That was an article every Friday, and it kind of grew and grew. And then Mark started the podcast arm of Lions of Liberty, and we started looking at, well, we're getting all these downloads here, and we're getting, like, you know, not so many people reading these blogs. Maybe we should pivot everyone to making podcasts. So we did that, and Felony Friday was born. And honestly, I had no idea what direction it was going to go in. I kind of stumbled into interviewing felons, people who'd been to prison, been through the system, suffered injustice. And that just kind of snowballed after I, you know, kept meeting more people that connect me with more people. And it's just this ever-growing network of individuals who have been affected. You know, it's interesting. They've all been affected in a bad way. Obviously, they've spent time in prison, some decades in prison, for crimes that, you know, it's incredible to imagine that you can spend a decade or more in prison for a crime where there were no drugs. They call it ghost dope. And you can just be convicted based on hearsay evidence, based on, you know, somebody who's getting a reduced sentence, who comes in and says, yeah, I bought some drugs off of that guy there. And then they get a reduced sentence. The other person gets, you know, 10, 15 years in prison. Happens all the freaking time. And I kept meeting more people like that. And it's just grown from there. And yeah, I don't know. Did I answer the question? I think I did.
Yeah. No. In that situation, like that you just mentioned, is it that people who go to jail for so many times in a ghost deal where they, you know, don't have any physical evidence of it, it's all hearsay, is it that they just get a whole stack of charges and they're looking at it and then they decide to take a plea deal? Or is it that they take these cases to trial and lose?
Very rare is a trial. Yeah, it's mostly plea deals. But even the ones that go to trial are the ones who get railroaded, because they'll still take it. They'll still take it to trial. And if it's the federal government, I mean, the federal government doesn't matter if you're guilty or not. I mean, you're pretty much going to lose.
Yeah. And I've done some work on this before, but it seems like, you know, as much as I know that a jury is the backbone of our Western system, and I guess you could talk about Lysander Spooner and jury nullification, he calls it like the palladium of liberty. It's a double-edged sword, and I'm sure that you know about this, because people have these ideas in their mind, and I'm not sure if that's, you know, if that's engineered in some way by shows like CSI or just public opinion. That I'm sure you've run into this or heard about it, is that people, there's something called undue prejudice in evidence, and people just have these things in their mind. They glob onto something and they say, oh, well, you know, he's involved with drugs. He's a dirtbag. We can't trust him. Is that something that you've heard a lot? Is that, oh, the jury bought this and therefore, you know, anything. Yeah.
Yeah. One case that comes to mind, couple of months ago, or I got time flies, maybe it was several months ago,
right?
But I had a guy on named Rufus Rochelle, who is just an awesome guy, and he did, I don't want to misquote how much time he did, but he did more than a decade in prison. And he had, it was a case like I just talked about, it was ghost dope, there was never anything found. And what had happened was, how he got convicted, there was a prominent, and this is back in, I guess in the 90s, maybe the early 2000s, there was a prominent University of North Carolina basketball player who had got caught with drugs. And in order for him to get out of it, he was, coerced into turning the person in who sold him the drugs. And he basically, you know, just pointed and said, you know, it was that guy. They found someone, which turned out to be Rufus. Rufus had no connection with him and never met him. And years later, I'm pretty sure this basketball star, I don't think actually turned into an NBA star or anything, but I'm pretty sure that he admitted to fingering the wrong guy and said, no, it was actually that guy. I don't know if it was nefarious. The guy might have just, you know, he's in a situation, he wants to keep playing basketball and he wanted to give the cops what they wanted. But it's as simple as that. And, you know, Rufus goes into it thinking, I'm innocent. You know, the system is supposed to prove that I'm innocent. I can beat this charge. And you have a situation a lot of the times with people who, you know, are involved in that sort of situation, even to get in that situation, if they did nothing wrong, you're coming from poorer communities, you can't afford very good representation. You get lawyers who don't even understand the law, don't even understand what they're doing. And, you know, one thing leads to another and you're doing more than a decade in prison.
Yeah, it's rough. Just the state of everything. I mean, I came across a case in my practice where there was a local gentleman who wanted to sue for a civil rights violation because he had been fingered, because someone robbed an ATM and they looked back through the security footage and he had used the ATM prior to it being robbed. And like 10 months later, the police looked at it and they finally identified him 10 months later and slapped him with these charges. He was a working man. He had money. He did not qualify for the public defender. He had to hire a lawyer at his own expense to go through the rigmarole of getting these charges dropped, which they were, but that's a testament to how BS everything was in the first place. So, I mean, you get in this situation, even if you're not wrongfully convicted, that you have to hire a lawyer at your own expense, and no one, you know, you could, he lost his job because of it, because he had these pending felony charges. And it really seems like instead of the presumption of innocence, it's really the other way. You know,
I know it really is. Yeah. And what you were talking about at the beginning of the last question you asked me, just in general, I've just run into people, you know, coworkers, people that you meet through, acquaintances who have done jury duty. And I mean, they admit that they go in, I just looked at that guy, I just knew he was guilty of selling drugs.
Yeah.
And you know, these people, they don't even know, they've never heard of jury nullification. They've never heard of anything like that. and they trust the police. You know, the police never do anything wrong. And this isn't like a Republican or Democrat thing. This is, you know, this is across society. I think it's kind of, it's a misnomer to say that it's more just Republicans who are, you know, more pro cop. I think it's pretty much across the board that in, especially suburbia, that you're going to have that really across classes, across political parties, people being pro police, at least believing police officers. They'll believe police officer talking about someone else, but if something happens to them, then they want everyone to, you know, believe that, you know, the police got something wrong. It's just, I think it's something inherent in our human nature that it's sort of set up this system that I'm not going to say it's doomed to fail, because I think, I don't know how it can be saved, but I mean, getting rid of a lot of these laws is one way, but I mean, I'm sure you have some ideas, you know, being so intimately familiar with it and working in it every day.
Yeah. I mean, some things that come to mind, I don't always agree with Rothbard when on his comments on the law. One thing that I do agree with him is on pretrial detention. And I think that would go a long way to, you know, potentially getting rid of these or some kind of a punishment for overcharging crimes. So a punishment for overcharging crimes, getting rid of pretrial detention where the state or the prosecutor has to, they have to pay back people who are acquitted or who, you know, they drop the charges or something like that. I think that could go some ways, but, how many people that you've talked to have been entrapped? Would you say like a rough percentage estimate?
That's hard to say because yeah. I mean, entrapped in a way that it's, you know, entrapped with a buy by a federal agent, that's one way, but there's also, you know, entrapment in, you know, a lot of the women that I've had on the show were convicted of conspiracy charges, and they were almost entrapped. Some of them were entrapped by saying, you know, well, if you don't plead to this, then, you know, we're going to throw the book at your husband. Or sometimes vice versa. I mean, they'll say it to the man, if you don't agree to this plea deal, we're going to go after your wife or go after your sister, whoever else might've answered a phone or might've just, driven a car, not necessarily even involved in any way. But, there's just so many ways that they can get you. I don't know, put a percentage on it, more than half for sure.
Yeah.
In some way.
At one point in time, I had done an episode about FBI entrapment program or, you know, entrapment stings. And it seems like that most of the terrorism that was going on, you know, involving young Middle Eastern men would not have taken place at all if not for the FBI. In law school, we studied entrapment, and I won't go too in depth, but there's a famous Wisconsin case, I think, where someone was stealing a barrel of meat or something from a meat processing plant, completely Wisconsin. But they determined
cheese in Wisconsin.
Yeah, you would think so. I think it was, you know, the Acme Packers or something like that. So they just determined that, okay, well, you did the crime, even though it was set up for you. And the mens rea is there, the actus reus is there. Therefore, you're guilty. I guess my counter to that is that, well, if you set up that situation, then we should charge the law enforcement with conspiracy or aiding and abetting or something like that.
Mm-hmm. No, I 100% agree. And it's, you only hear about the FBI entrapment plans where they catch the person and, you know, they do it in a way where, you know, no one's harmed, a bomb doesn't go off, but there's a lot of these things that you look at them. Like, I'm not going to say that, you know, the Boston bombing was one of those situations, but it certainly could have been. We'll never know if they just let it go too far and weren't able to stop it. There was one recently that I was thinking, I'm drawing a blank right now, but within the past year, there was one that really, really seemed like entrapment, but I'm totally, totally flaking out on it anyway.
Well, one thing that's brought up a lot too is like, what do the FBI agents do to entrap these young Middle Eastern gentlemen? They show them propaganda of U.S. war crimes or evidence of U.S. war crimes. It's just kind of a morbidly funny anecdote. But
blowback. Well, I mean, yeah. like Ron Paul said famously to Rudy Giuliani when he taught Rudy back in the day, when people actually, surprisingly, shockingly, actually liked Rudy Giuliani back then. There were people that did. But when he explained blowback to Rudy, yeah, that's obviously why they hate us. So use that same thing. Yeah, see what we're doing to your people over there?
Hang on a sec there, John. Hey, everybody, welcome to the part of the show where I tell you how you can help support this content. Go to libertyweekly.net/support. You can find all the links there. Patreon, Subscribestar, float.app, where you can support the content for crypto. You can also go to library.tv or libertyweekly.net/LBRY. I'm posting exclusive library-only content there that you can't find anywhere else in an effort to try and get you guys to drop YouTube and to go on over to library and subscribe there. I did some extra episodes about Tim Pool and his anti-China rhetoric. Going to be other bonuses that are coming there. You can also find bonus content that you would get as a Patreon supporter through library.tv for LBC, Library Credits, the cryptocurrency, and you can get those a la carte. And it actually won't cost you anything because you get LBC for free for using the website and watching content on Library or Odysseys is another platform there. I also wanted to say that we are still doing our fundraiser at the Libertarian Institute. That is Scott Horton's Libertarian Institute. You can get awesome bonuses there. We're now getting fund matching up to $20,000, and we're almost to our goal of $50,000. So really appreciate it if you would check that out. LibertarianInstitute.org/donate. So you can go there. You can get signed copies of Scott's book. You can also get a Ron Paul copper coin at certain levels, lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Audio. Really, really, really do appreciate that. Thank you guys so much for any of you that have already supported. It really means a lot to us and for all the work that we do. Also, if you want to join the Discord channel, go to libertyweekly.net/Discord. And I wanted to say that we have done our second Patreon subscriber hangout where I've hung out with our Patreon subscribers. Thank you to Scott and Lee. Really do appreciate that time. Appreciate your support. And thank you to all the other Patreon subscribers. Really do appreciate you. Okay, well, without further ado, thanks for listening and back to the show. How you had kind of mentioned this in your answer to my first question about how you got interested in wrongful convictions, but your show is very unique, and I can't just offhand, I mean, I can't think of a lot of shows that have interviews like that. How did you, you mentioned how you first got into it, but how have you kept finding these new stories, and how do you get in contact with folks?
Yeah, so like I said, I've built up a network over the years, and I mean, a couple of people have been very instrumental in helping me, connecting me with people. There is a foundation called Can Do. It's the Can Do Foundation, Can Do Clemency. It was founded by Amy Pova. And Amy Pova is one of those individuals who did time for conspiracy. And her ex-husband, I believe, was involved in an ecstasy ring. And she was roped into it, had no involvement at all. And she got out. She was one of the first people to get herself clemency. She did it through letter writing campaigns to senators and representatives, and she was able to get her own clemency. She got an article written about her, I think in Playboy, and she got out. And when she did, she'd met so many other women who were in prison for similar things. She started this foundation, and she's been very instrumental in this push. You know, she's worked with Alice Johnson, so many people who have gotten out recently. And it's not just women. Rufus, for example, is someone who was advocated for by Can Do Clemency, but people in that organization, and then also just people who come on my show, you know, they know so many people who are, it's so interesting, like to hear about someone, you know, someone will be on my show, and after the show, they'll be telling me about other people who they were in prison with. And I'm like, yeah, like another guy I've had on recently, Chad Marks, probably one of the most successful jailhouse lawyers that there's ever been. Just, you know, he has no law degree. If people don't know, a jailhouse lawyer is someone who teaches themselves the law, and he started doing it to get his own freedom. And he actually got a lot of other people free before he was able to get himself free. And then now that he's gotten out, he's dedicated his life to it. And there's so many people like that. And, you know, he'll just be telling me about someone's story, And one of the pot lifers who I was telling you that I'm hoping to have on the show in the next few weeks here, who is a paraplegic. Chad was just telling me his story when he was on my show a few months ago, and now I'll get to interview him. So it's almost like it's crazy to see these things come to fruition, where I feel like there's just so much momentum. And even with the change in administrations, I feel like there's so much momentum behind criminal justice reform right now. And I'm not even sure if the people are really waking up to it. But I think enough are that they're able to put strategic pressure on politicians. And it's amazing how many politicians just have no freaking idea how bad these laws are and how many people, for example, were in prison for selling marijuana, completely nonviolent crimes, just absurd things. And Kim Kardashian, I mean, hater or lover, she's done an amazing thing to shine a light on injustice. So I don't know. It's been a cool experience, and the people that I've met have inspired me. And one thing I can't stand, and it's not like I'm mad about it because I understand where people are coming from, but I'll get feedback on the show that, you know, people say, John, I love your show. I love hearing these stories, but you know, I get depressed listening to them because of everything that people went through. And I never feel that really, because the interaction I have during the interview, there's so much positivity, and you would think these people would be bitter. They have every right to be bitter. But when they do get out, 99% of them, the first thing they do is want to turn around and help one of their friends, you know, who basically have become a part of their family, to get out, you know, as soon as they get their own freedom. And then they'll come out, they'll start businesses. And, you know, one of the favorite interviews I've ever done, I just re-interviewed him because the interview is so good. He's such an inspiring guy. A guy named by the name of Casa Marte, who he did, I think it was it 10 years, something like that. And he called himself the Uber of selling drugs before Uber was even in existence. And the guy, he worked his butt off selling drugs, made millions of dollars in New York City, and got caught, went to prison, was totally out of shape, was way overweight, was, you know, doctors were telling me he was probably going to die. So he got in shape in prison, and he started a workout program in prison, got people working out with him in prison. He got out of prison. He used that same tenacity to make sales selling drugs just by going up to people in the park saying, hey, you want to work out with me? You want a free workout class? Got a group of people working out in a park, and was able to work his ass off and parlay that into Conbody, which is a fast-growing fitness business in New York City. And then I just talked to him recently. So during the pandemic, I was asking about how he pivoted during the pandemic. And, you know, a lot of gyms, and he doesn't have a gym, it's you know, body workouts. You can do it at home. You can watch on the TV. He said the day they did the lockdown, he just set up a cell phone and he started just live streaming workouts, pivoted immediately. Then he's obviously expanded to, you know, more cameras and things. But to just see like the ingenuity in that it was so inspiring.
I'm really glad you say that too, because that was kind of a comment that I had. Is I was just going to talk about, you know, what, how terrible it is in our society that, you know, so many people are imprisoned. I think that it's, you know, hopefully criminal justice reform happens, and that in 50 years we'll look back at this time and be like, whoa. I mean, that was really something that rivaled, I don't know, I don't want to be hyperbolic and say gulags in Soviet Russia, but in a way, I think it's appropriate, you know?
I mean, it is in a sense, modern day slavery. I mean, essentially they're able to lock people up for nonviolent crimes and then contract their labor out to all these companies making license plates or making mattresses or doing carpentry, all this stuff, and getting literally pennies on the dollar. And then they get charged. I mean, they get charged for being in prison. They have to. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's just insane. Well, I know that. Let's see here. Do you find that these human stories are more effective in advocating for criminal justice reform than, I don't know if you've ever tried to convince people with statistics or writing a book or giving a speech or anything like that?
I do think human stories are the most effective way to persuade people. I think stories about anything are the most effective way to persuade. A lot of the time, not that statistics and reason and logic are useless. I think they're very useful. Mm-hmm. But if you're trying to change someone's mind, and maybe not even change it on the spot, but just open it, just open up a little crack, so maybe over time, they can be open to changing their mind. Human stories, people being able to see a real life individual who has a family, who has maybe kids, who has parents, and are able to relate to that happening. And then it might remind them of something in their own life that they saw happen, but maybe they had a different view of it. I think that's the way to, not to be too over the top, but that's the only way we are going to change the system and honestly change the world is through these, human interest stories by telling, and also telling our own stories. I talk about with COVID, you go on Twitter and I'm on libertarian Twitter. So it's people showing charts and graphs and masks aren't working. And you can see it here and here and here. Nobody cares about that because you can show another chart that shows something else or another chart that contradicts it. Nobody cares. It's hard to have human interest stories around COVID to a point. I mean, there's been a lot of people that have had, terrible things happen, losing businesses, suicides, mental illness, just horrible things. Those are real people really suffering. And I don't know if there is a podcast out there like that, giving some people who've suffered through those a voice, but that's a great podcast. It's a free one, free podcast. Yeah. Somebody grab that and start doing it.
Yeah. One thing I've said a lot is that everyone should have a podcast. And I know that some content creators say there's too many libertarian podcasts and some consumers of podcasts say there's too many libertarian podcasts, but I really think about it in, I guess I've said this on shows lately, so I apologize for the audience, but if think about how many people you have meaningful conversations with in your own life, that's probably two or three. Well, even if you get 20 downloads per episode, that's 20 people that are listening to you. So that's, it's huge growth. I think it's important. Take that. Somebody take that and run with it. There's a space. I think that's a great transition, though. So how has your show changed from going from Felony Fridays to Finding Freedom?
Yeah, good question. Thanks for asking that. So I'm still going to focus on the criminal justice system. I'll still continue to have those people on, but the expansion will be in talking about things like addiction. I have had on people previously who have struggled with addiction and also, had an injustice they suffered. But I think that, similar to COVID, it's so important for people to be able to have stories to relate to and, just give people an outlet, a safe place to, they can listen to a podcast and understand that someone else is going through something like they are. So I will have on, more people who have, who have struggled with addiction and who are, on the mend. But also, and I haven't done this yet, but I'd like to also get more into the business realm, and not necessarily just people coming out of prison, but maybe people who've immigrated into this country and have started a business and found success, or people who grew up in extreme poverty and started a business, or maybe worked their way up the corporate ladder, or started a foundation or a charity that did something impactful. I just really feel like I'm being called and so motivated to just put out a positive message right now. It's because we're so surrounded with negativity. And I just think that's like one of the things that can cut through the noise. So that's my goal.
I have a couple great leads for you. I'll tell you after the show, but I got a couple great leads for you.
Awesome.
So as a libertarian, one thing that I've kind of focused on in my content is that this Harry Brown routine about finding freedom in an unfree world. And I've been doing some work and research on this, but it seems like one thing that plagues libertarians is just letting, getting so so passionate about advocacy and libertarianism that it's all you think about. And there's psychological studies out there that deal with passion for a certain cause. And on the one hand, there's something called harmonious passion. They theorize that, you know, you identify with the cause, you like to advocate for it, but you control it in your life and you don't let it overtake you or compel you. And then there's something called obsessive passion, where folks, they just get carried away. They feel compelled. All they do is think about libertarianism, for instance, and they at the expense of their other relationships, and they end up having a net loss of, you know, personal enjoyment and freedom because of their obsessive activism. So have you ever struggled with that? Because I've been trying to identify, I certainly have, and I feel like a lot of other libertarians have.
Yes, I definitely have. And I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that I am sort of pivoting with the podcast, just to have, you know, more flexibility. Cause I mean, it's easy to wear yourself out. And it's not just the podcast I do. I also work a full-time job, have several side businesses in addition to the podcast. And I'm also, for our local county party, I'm the treasurer, which that role gets neglected the most because it's not much room on the plate.
Yeah.
But it's especially with the election, this recent election, and just the negativity, and it's very easy to get burned out. And Twitter, my God, Twitter, be careful.
Yeah.
Spending too much time on Twitter. It's very easy to feel like everything you're doing is fruitless. But I think you brought up a great point before talking about libertarians starting a podcast. And I'll take it one step farther than that. And libertarians don't have to start libertarian podcasts per se. You can still be a libertarian and start a podcast about something else. And those libertarian ideals they're going to bleed through. I mean, I'm not saying that you need to, you know, just put a 5-minute libertarian rant at the end of every episode, but yeah. People will unknowingly just pick up on those parts of you. And it's a great way to spread the message. And I agree with you. I think more people should start podcasts. And I think podcasts 5-10 years from now are going to be like the new, I mean, it's not going to be like, oh, do you have a Facebook account? Oh, you have a podcast. It'll be the same thing. Like everyone's going to have some, maybe not podcasts, but they'll be doing maybe a daily, you know, daily videos, things like that. Everyone's going to be putting out content in some form because it's so easy to do. I mean, why would you not? And anyone who doesn't is just going to get left behind, I think.
I don't want to get too personal, but do you have kids?
I do. Yes. One. Yeah.
Yes.
My 5-year-old daughter.
Okay. Wonderful. I have a son myself, and you know, it's trying to think about balancing all these things. You know, I'm on the board of a nonprofit too. I have a full-time job. I don't have my side hustles yet, but my son's 2 years old and we have another one on the way. And so it's just like, you're split in so many directions. And it seems like, you know, a good point that Harry Brown made is basically that if you are letting the state control your life because you're raging against it or working so hard against it, in a way that's still, the state is still controlling your life. So have you, I mean, I guess I don't know exactly what I want to ask, but how have you dealt with that balance?
No, that's, I know exactly what you want to ask. Yeah. And it's been, so yeah, there's been times that I've not dealt with it the right way, where I've definitely worked too much. But I think one thing that has helped me, and it's actually sort of the lockdowns way back in, I guess that was last March, almost a year ago, that kind of started this, is, you know, my wife and I started scheduling time, not only like for us to have, like, we couldn't go out on a date, but we'll just have like a set date night, you know, where we have our time, we'll have set family time where we'll sit down together. And I would hear people talk about this, you know, schedule time with your family. And well, yeah, that sounds like kind of cold. You're scheduling your family. You need to. And once you do it a few times, it doesn't become like, oh, it's on my schedule. It's just what you're doing. Like, you're just doing that. That, like, for Friday night, that's what we do. It's our family time. It's my wife and I. It's our date night. Like, there's no, someone tries to get me to do something. No, I'm sorry. There's no chance. So you have to put up your own boundaries around stuff. And I think, you know, I think the more that, you know, eventually here, hopefully I'm able to ditch my corporate job. I don't want to just fill all that time back up with stuff. I want to expand my boundaries then, you know, have more, you know, more time with family, more time that I can, choose, put a lot of thought into what I want to do with it.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about Run Your Mouth Coffee.
Yeah, so Run Your Mouth Coffee, it is a coffee business started by myself and Ben Panji. Ben is the host of the Homestead and Homeschools podcast. Great podcast, so check that one out if you haven't heard of it, especially if you're someone who homeschools. And if you're someone who homeschools and likes to talk, he will definitely interview you. So check out that one. It's a great show. But Ben and I, you know, we've been sort of – I've known him since – but 2018, we worked together. He's down in Georgia, but I managed a Senate campaign for a Libertarian candidate, Dale Kearns in Pennsylvania. And Ben helped me out with writing newsletters and things like that. So we had a good working relationship, and we'd been talking about starting a coffee business. And we actually came up with the idea of Run Your Mouth Coffee before censorship got out of control previously here the past few months. But the coffee business, it's fresh roasted coffee. It's roast to order. So you go to our site, rymcoffee.com. And when you place your order, it's roasted the next day. It's not coming off of a shelf like an Amazon, or if you go to the grocery store, sitting there for God knows how long. And it comes to your doorstep. And our main thing that we want to stand for is free speech, not only government protected free speech, but uncensored speech in society. And I think a lot of free speech advocates sort of they stand back and say, well, a private business can censor them if they want to. And yes, they can, but it's not good for society. It's not good for culture to have people censored for the same reason why the government shouldn't be censoring people's speech. Because when we censor speech, as you know, Patrick, it's sort of, even if you have abhorrent ideas, when that speech is censored, when it's pushed off a platform, that sort of lends some, I don't want to say credibility to the message, but it entices people to think, oh, maybe there's something here. Why are they trying to silence this guy? And then it can kind of build up in the back alleys of society. You want those ideas, even those ideas, to be in the open, where they can be talked about, named if needed to be. And you want businesses to feel free to speak out too, because if they say something that's bad or something that's really good, you want to be able to reward them with your business, or protest them by not buying from them. So we're just trying to raise awareness on that. Phase one right now, we're running some ads on a few podcasts, just trying to grow the brand. But eventually we'd like to help people who maybe don't have a platform yet, or a podcast, or an audience. Once we build our audience up, to give people a platform to come on and let them run their mouth and talk about what they're passionate about. So that's the thought process there, and encourage your listeners to come in and check it out. We have five different varieties of coffee now. We got one that is a whiskey barrel aged coffee. It's by far our most popular seller. It's called Rebellion Beans, and it's aged for 30 days in a bourbon barrel and then roasted on order.
I love coffee. Just saying. I'll put that in the show notes page, and I'm not exactly sure which number episode this will be yet, but I'll announce it at the beginning so everyone can go there. But otherwise, the website is what?
Yeah, the website is rymcoffee.com. So Run Your Mouth. It's just the letters there, rymcoffee.com.
Awesome. Yeah, well, it was a great pleasure to talk to you tonight, John. Is there any other place that you want to direct listeners to?
I'll just say again, thanks for having me on, Patrick. This was a lot of fun getting to talk with you. You do a great job interviewing. It's very conversational, so I wanted to compliment you there. But for Finding Freedom, I don't know if I said this when you were asking me about it, but it's the Lions of Liberty podcast. So that's the umbrella. So you can search that wherever you listen to your podcast. It'll come up. You can subscribe. You also get our Monday show hosted by Mark Clare, which is our flagship program. Mark was the first one to start podcasting. He just had his 500th episode and got a shout out from Dr. Ron Paul on the episode. So go check that out. And then on Wednesday is Electric Liberty Land. That's hosted by Brian McWilliams. And that's more culture, comedy. There is some cursing on that show. So if you have kids, you probably don't want to listen with them. And then my show is now published every Thursday, Finding Freedom.
Awesome, John. Well, thank you guys for your work. I really appreciate it. And just keep it up.
Thank you, Patrick.